The Milwaukee Brewers may have had a sloppy finish to the road trip in Philadelphia on Sunday, but two back-to-back phenomenal offensive performances, and maybe you can say they've snapped out of this mini doldrum they went in when they went to visit the Chicago White Sox and the Cleveland Indians. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. The Brewers are coming back home, and they're going to stay home a lot in the weeks ahead. They do take some brief road trips, but there's some one-city trips in there. They have spent a lot of time on the road, and now we're going to get to see them at Miller Park quite a bit through the rest of June and really up until the All-Star break. So it'll be the Cubs to kick things off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I know everybody's favorite house guest at Miller Park, the Chicago Cubs, will be stopping by, and that's your team that you're battling with for first place. They come in a half game behind the Brewers for first place in the National League Central. The Brewers still doing very well. The Cubs have picked it up here in the last few weeks, and they're looking like the team that's still going to win the Central. But the Brewers are going to hold them off as long as they can, and maybe even push past them. This would certainly be a big series for that. So a couple things coming up for you. I'm going to chat with Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, to chat about the Brewers. There was a trade that happened on Sunday afternoon after their game against Philadelphia, so we'll be talking about that, of course. We'll be talking about some of the other things facing the Brewers. Eric Thames is on his way back. The Brewers starting pitcher, Chase Anderson, for opening day starter, struggling a little bit, so might touch on that a little bit. And an interesting story by Tom Haudricourt about Lorenzo Cain and sort of the leadership that he's brought to the table since he signed as a free agent in the offseason. We'll talk a little bit about Lorenzo Cain's influence on this team as well. After that, I sat down with Jerry Augustine, one of the Brewers' TV announcers. He's on pregame and postgame for FS Wisconsin. Super interesting to get to chat with him. I wanted to talk to him about the late Davey Nelson, who's going to be honored before a game here coming up in the next couple weeks, where a former TV announcer as well as base coach for the Brewers, a guy that everybody loves, great baseball guy, passed away a few months ago, so they're going to be honoring him. Wanted to talk about Davey Nelson and his relationship with Jerry Augustine. Also, Jerry was a Milwaukee Brewer his whole career when he played in the 1970s, so I got his take on just kind of what 1970s baseball was like around Milwaukee. It was the first decade of the new franchise, and sort of how the fans related to the players, and if the enthusiasm was as good as it is now that the team is competing pretty regularly to get to the postseason. Also talked to him a little bit about UWM, UW-Milwaukee baseball. Jerry was the head baseball coach for several years there, so we chatted about that. He's been with FS Wisconsin now for 11 years, so he's been very visible in the Milwaukee Brewers community. Also on Twitter, if you read my story from a few weeks ago, St. Augie is a online, basically a Twitter meme that every time the Brewers win, there's a picture of Jerry Augustine from very early in the season with the kind of the glint of the lights off of Busch Stadium at St. Louis in the background. It was a screen capture from a TV post game where Jerry was talking to the screen, or just this post game conversation analysis, and there's the screen capture of the light sort of flickering in the background, giving him a very divine glow. So St. Augie kind of became a thing. Mentioned that briefly in our interview as well. But first, let's talk to Todd Rosiak. He'll be covering the team this week as the six game homestand featuring the Cubs and Phillies gets underway. Todd, thanks for joining us. The first news, the first bit we'll talk about is news that comes a little bit off the field after Sunday's game, Sunday's loss in Philadelphia. The Brewers announced a trade. G-Man Choi, most recently seen hitting a pinch hit grand slam on Saturday, is no longer a Brewer. He's been traded to Tampa in exchange for Brad Miller, who is a middle infielder type, shortstop, second base type, who has been struggling a little bit, but has some good home run numbers in his past as well. Brewers were desperate for middle infield help, had plenty of first basemen. It makes perfect sense on paper, but I'm curious what your reaction was when you heard that name. Was that a name you'd heard before or thought about before as a possible Brewers target? What was your reaction to the deal?
My reaction was, well, this sucks because Haudricourt's on a plane flying home, and I have to interrupt my father's birthday/Father's Day dinner to run to a laptop to write up the story. So
it that always was my comes reaction. Back to Todd. It's always about Todd.
there's both a me and an I in media, so that will explain my thoughts there. But anyway, I know you're talking about the actual trade. from a selfish standpoint, we're disappointed that we're losing the G-Man because he was a tremendous individual, great interview. But for him, obviously a good move because he wants to play. You know, he went out of his way to make sure that I understood, that the fans understood last week in Chicago, that this report that came out on Twitter about him demanding a trade was not accurate, was not true. You know, I believe him, and I don't think there's any reason to doubt that. But he also admitted to me that he was disappointed. It was hard on him bouncing back and forth the way he was from Colorado Springs to the majors and vice versa. And you can't blame the guy, you know. So it'll be good for him. He's going to get an opportunity down there, I would think, to get some regular at-bats and contribute to a team that is clearly rebuilding, but playing time is playing time. As far as the Brewers go, you take a flyer on a guy like Brad Miller. Now, shortstop is the most glaring need position, I would say, right now on the Brewers. He has played it in the past, but he has not played any shortstop in the last 2 years. So David Stearns was communicating with HadriCorp before he got on his flight, and Stearns basically said that they will be trying him at all positions. So I would assume once he gets called up, which will probably be sooner rather than later, we'll see him at shortstop a little bit to see what he can do. But as you mentioned, the power hitter. In the past, he does have the threat of the long ball. He's a left-handed hitter. You know, he's a guy who's got another year of arbitration left. So if he pans out for the Brewers this year, he could be back next year. Obviously, a lot of other things have to shake out first. But just, you know, kind of a spare part for a spare part. And sometimes those trades work out well for both sides. So we'll see how this one goes for the Brewers.
With Eric Thames coming back, I don't think there's a deal that could have made more sense. And I know there's anytime there's a popular player that gets moved, there's some pushback from fans. But it's guys like you said, a spare part for a spare part. We're talking about guys that aren't going to be asked to do a whole lot for their old team or their new team. But it does stink to lose a guy that just hit that pinch hit grand slam. I mean, what a memory. Somebody I follow on Twitter. Andy Schaaf, actually kind of a friend of mine, pointed out that him and G-Man Choi and Russell Brandon are basically going to be the only two Brewers in history who are universally beloved and did nothing wrong in their careers because they were short enough and exciting enough that fans will appreciate it. So it is disappointing, I guess, to see a guy go, but it just makes so much sense. And I guess, like you're saying, with them playing Brad Miller everywhere, it sounds like we could see a lot more of Jonathan Villar back at shortstop if Orlando Arcia is the guy to get sent down. And I don't know if that's definitely what this is saying, that Orlando Arcia is going to get sent back to AAA to work on some things. That would be my first read. Is that kind of how you would read it as well?
I don't know. I that's a stretch for me, honestly. I guess it could happen, but I feel like they feel like they've just gotten VR going now. They've figured out his defensive woes. He was working with Carlos Subero about his footwork. I don't know if all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense to switch the guy, you know, and then just totally throw into disarray everything that he's done to this point. They've not played him at shortstop at all, you know, for what, a year and a half now since Arcia first came up. I don't know that makes a lot of sense. What would not surprise me is they continue on this path here for the next few days and next week or whatever with Arcia and Sogard. See how it gets Brad Miller some at-bats at AAA. You call him up, you throw him out there and see what he can do. That would be my guess at this point. You know, you've got Hernan Perez on the roster. He can play some shortstop as well, but we have not seen him there for a long time. So, I don't know. That's just my take on it. I could be totally off base. We'll have our opportunity tomorrow to ask Craig Counsell what he foresees, but I'd be stunned if they tried VR anywhere with any kind of regularity other than second base.
Definitely. We'll learn more about that on Monday night, like you said. So back to this previous weekend, the Brewers sloppy finish on Sunday, a couple errors in a 3-run inning kind of tipped the scales in a 4-3 loss to the Phillies. But overall, a great weekend. They scored, you know, 12 runs in back-to-back games. And I think outscored the Phillies 27-11. So that's a productive series. On the heels of a road trip that was, I guess, the overall road trip 3-4, not terrible, not great, considering they were playing the White Sox and lost 2 of 3 there, lost a couple to Cleveland. You know, again, I don't think this is a road trip that necessarily is marking the beginning of the end or anything, but was there anything here that gave you pause, since this is the first stretch in a long time where the Brewers have, I guess, struggled to get things going on all cylinders every single game?
it was just kind of a weird road trip from the standpoint that, you know, you expect the Brewers to go into Chicago and whip up on the White Sox, and they turn in a terrible series there. They go to Cleveland, where you kind of expected struggles, and that's exactly what happened against two really good pitchers. And then you kind of expected them going into Philly, where the Phillies have played well, to struggle against Philadelphia, and then lo and behold, they blow up for 24 runs in the first two games. Yeah, the last game was kind of a bummer for them, but just kind of a weird road trip to read. Although, you know, I don't think you really can read much of anything out of it, other than it was a disappointment because it was a losing road trip when they probably should have had another one in their back pocket. So, you know, offense continues to be spotty. Starting pitching has been okay. You know, bullpen had a few blips here and there, but overall, I don't think there's really too much to conclude from it. You know, of course, now we've got the Cubs coming in this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and this will be the end-all, be-all series of all time, like everybody likes to make it up. Yeah, so at least we have something interesting to talk about here over the next few days.
Ah, yes, Cubs fans descending on Miller Park. I think I said it was a 3-4 road trip, 3-4. It was 3-5. My counting not the best here. But Sunday in that game, Brandon Woodruff goes 4 innings. He got pulled really because a combination of them trying to score a run in a big run scoring situation and the weather moving in. It really seemed like that Sunday game was going to get rain shortened at some point. It never actually did. But Woodruff looked really good at times. He did give up a run in his 4 innings. But as back and forth as this guy has been this year between AAA and the big league club, I am starting to get the feeling that he's going to be on, you know, he's going to be in there for some really big innings and some big starts later in the year, especially if guys find health problems, and we've seen that with some of the starters so far. So how do you feel about Brandon Woodruff at this point? Do you feel like he's still just a spot guy and is going to keep going back to AAA, or do you think maybe he's going to, you know, work his way into being a reliable contributor down the stretch?
I guess it all depends on what, you know, what kind of moves are made as the season goes on. You assume that they're going to be competitive throughout, and then we get close to the trade deadline. You know, obviously you're going to be looking to upgrade, but the Brewers have liked his competitiveness since day one. You know, if you remember that major league debut he made in Tampa last year, excuse me, highly competitive, did a really good job. And he pitched some big games last year down the stretch for the Brewers as well. So I know the Brewers think highly of his competitiveness. He's got some good stuff, obviously. I think it's just tough when you're going up and down like he has been, to kind of gain any continuity, if that makes sense. You know, I'm sure he realized coming today, if they hadn't told him already, that it was going to be a short stay with Eric Thames coming off the DL tomorrow. You know, you do the best you can under the circumstances that you're presented, and you know, eventually you build up enough status that you get off that merry-go-round and you kind of cement your place. But you know, all signs and all things that he's done to this point make you think that he's definitely a guy that's going to be in the plans long term. It just becomes a matter of when. And, you know, the best thing he can do, obviously, is just continue to pitch well when he gets the opportunities, and try and force the Brewers' hand, try to force him, make him, keep him up and keep him in the rotation. We still don't know what's going on with Davies as far as when he's coming back. You know, Suter's that guy that can bounce back and forth between the bullpen and the rotation if needed. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch, but he's definitely a guy that factors into the plans, and it's just another arm. You can never have too many of those.
It's been one of the rare pitcher who's had success at Colorado Springs this year, despite what you said. He's going back and forth. He's not on any regular schedule as a result, but he has been effective and has shown some flashes in the big league level. So I'm very curious to know what ends up happening with him. Tom Audricourt, your colleague, wrote a story earlier in the week about Lorenzo Cain, kind of just talking about his value as a leader and as the type of guy who's obviously he's had some success on the field. He's kind of one of the frontline guys for this Brewers team. And I'm just curious how different he is compared to when he was the first time he was here, when he was more of an up and coming prospect. I'm sure there's some natural increase in maturity and just presence and stuff like that. But I guess, do you also see him as kind of the leader of this team, and how marked is the progression that he's made from when he was here as a younger player?
I honestly, I'm not the guy to ask that because I was covering the team the year after he was traded. So that's when I started. So I missed him by a year, but I can speak to what I see now. And he's, you know, everything Tom talked about in that story. He's a confident guy. He's a gregarious guy. He's a guy who, to me, more than anything, leads by example. You know, he's 32 going on 33. He may be 33. I could be wrong. But the point is he's an older guy. And every single game, you look at him as he walks off the field, he's filthy. He's dirty. Diving around, stealing bases. I mean, making crazy good plays in the outfield. Hitting the cutoff man. Running balls down in the gap, drawing a walk, you know, working counts. He does everything right. He does all the little things right. And that's one of the reasons why he got all the money that he did. You know, he can still run well. He hits for power. He just does everything. And I think guys feed off that. He leads by, guys watch him play. He's all out all the time. And that can't help but rub off on some of the younger players. You know, he's not, from what I can gather and from what I've seen, he's not a, you know, a guy who's get in your face and, you know, rah, rah, rah and all that stuff. But you know, you can't help but play harder, I think, if you're playing next to him or you're watching him from the dugout when you get an opportunity, just because the guy's always going all out. So, you know, Hodricourt obviously would have a pretty good perspective of Lowe before he left Milwaukee the first time, and I'm sure back then he was a confident guy, but a young guy who was just kind of feeling his way. And, you know, I remember the play of him crashing into the fence in Cincinnati and, you know, watching him progress as he was with the Royals. But to me, he's been just a tremendous addition to the Brewers this year. And I don't think whatever he does cannot be understated. I was joking with him in, I think it was Chicago or maybe Minnesota. One of those games at Miller Park where a night game where he was camped under a fly ball ready to catch it and there was a bug in his face and he was like flicking the bug away from his face while the ball was coming down into his glove. And I tweeted something to the effect of, if only all of us could make our jobs look as easy as Lorenzo Cain. And I saw him like a day or two later and I said that to him and he just laughed and he's like, yeah, you know, I mean, it's what I do, you know, it's my job. And Craig Counsell said the same thing. I mean, he's one of the best outfielders in the world. You know, when you break it down like that, it's true. So just fun guy to watch every day and a fun guy to deal with.
It is true about his defense. Metrics love him. They think, in fact, he's leading the National League in WAR, which takes defense heavily into account. He had a highlight reel play Friday where he slid in behind Orlando Arcia. The ball glanced off Arcia's glove and Cain scooped it up before it hit the ground for the catch. So the old 6'8 fly ball put out, and Lorenzo Cain has definitely been worth his weight in gold. The Brewers may have even gotten a deal with the free agent contract that he signed.
Yeah, not to cut you off, last time I checked too, he was leading all major league outfielders in defensive runs saved as well, which is another key metric. So yeah, any way you slice it, the guy's been terrific for the Brewers and just a fun guy to watch play.
Let's move into some quick hitters. I'm wondering when you think we should officially be concerned about Chase Anderson. It seems like he's just sort of he's just laboring. Every time he's out there, he hasn't really found what made him so effective the last couple years. How do you view the struggles of Chase?
Panic. That's everybody panic.
I come to you for the panic, Todd. That's what I'm here for.
Well, I don't know. Let's start with the positives. No home runs allowed in his last two starts. Everybody was panicking about that, so that's obviously a good start. He was lifted early in Cleveland in his last start. You know, some second guessing could be done with the manager's move there. You know, the thing that's been different about him this year compared to last year is his velocity is down a tick. And we talked to Craig Counsell about that before Anderson's start there. And he said, hey, you know, if you look at his velocities over the course of his career, he's kind of back to where he was for most of his career now. You know, the 92.5, 93-mile-an-hour fastball, as opposed to the 94, 94.5-mile-an-hour fastball he had last year. And when you're not locating consistently, you're not spotting consistently, that drop of a mile an hour, mile and a half an hour can make a big difference. You know, you can get away with missing some pitches when you're throwing at 94, 95, 93, 92 and a half, guys are going to crush it, as you've seen. So it's kind of hard getting a read off of how Chase Anderson feels about it, because he's not one to panic. And even if he is, he's not going to let on publicly. He's just said, you know, hey, I've pitched some good ones, I've pitched some bad ones, you know, just working on trying to be consistent. It is what it is to this point. I don't really have much more insight than that, but it seems like he is trending in the right direction. You know, if all of a sudden he starts giving up a bunch more homers, then maybe it's back to the drawing board. But to me, the homers, no homers in the last two starts is a good sign. And we'll see what he does here next time out.
We kind of already touched on, speaking of trending in the right direction, Jonathan Villar. At first, his numbers were okay on the surface, but it's maybe not quite all the way back underneath that. But now I feel like Jonathan Villar is just full-fledged, having a bounce-back season. Like, his numbers are fine. He's reliable. He's come up with some big hits. And whether or not he ends up getting any time at shortstop or stays at second, like you feel he will, offensively, it feels like Jonathan Villar is back. What a weapon that they can have, even if he's not what he was 2 years ago, but close-ish to that. I mean, what a weapon that could be deep in the, you know, bottom third of the lineup.
Yeah. Again, Craig Counsell, talking to him about Villar, you know, he points out that when VR is going right is when he starts driving the ball to the gaps. He's been showing, you know, he's actually been hitting fairly well from the right side, hit a homer from the right side. To me, you could probably say this for any baseball player, any player in any sport really, but just on the sample size of what I see on the Brewers, VR and Santana are the two guys to me that benefit the most from playing every day. You know, you see, obviously VR did not get off to a good start last year, and it carried with him the rest of the season. You know, this year they kind of had that three-man rotation going at second base, and to his favor, neither Eric Sogard nor Hernan Perez really kind of grasped the bull by the horn. So VR got more opportunities. He did more with them, and he was hitting 300 a month into the season, but you didn't really feel like it was a strong 300. A lot of infield singles, bunt singles, that sort of thing. Now we're starting to see him stroke the ball and drive the ball, and it is getting closer to the VR of 2016. I don't know if the Brewers have just kind of put a red flag on him or not. I heard the guys in the broadcast talking about it this weekend. He's not really tried stealing much when he's been on base. Conversely, he's not made any base running mistakes either. So they might have just decided, hey, you know, when he gets on base, just let's keep him where he is. We need runs. Let's not run into any more silly outs. You know, the last one I remember was that one in Cincinnati where he tried going to second on a single right in front of him to right field and got thrown out by a mile. And that was when he kind of lost some playing time for a while. So I'm sure the Brewers are pleased with what they've seen. In my opinion, I think they just keep him at second base and try to keep him rolling the way he is and keep things simple for him and go from there.
Yeah, interesting you point that out. I hadn't noticed that the base running, that he wasn't attempting as many stolen bases, but now that you mention it, you haven't seen it quite as much. So that is an interesting point. So this you're going to have to brace yourself for the fan reaction, because Eric Thames is going to be back with this Brewers team probably by the end of this homestand, and then he's almost certainly going to have to split some time with Jesus Aguilar over at first base. People are going to have opinions about that, Todd. Are you ready for that?
Well, I mean, from what I read today, he's going to be back tomorrow, so he'll be rejoining the Brewers tomorrow, and it's going to be interesting. You know, we again, I keep referring, but, you know, a lot of these questions we talked with Craig Counsell about while we were in Cleveland, and, you know, he jumped us before we could even ask, you know, hey, what's going to happen once Thames gets back? He said, I know what you guys are going to ask, and before I'm not going to answer it, but he's going to play some outfield in Colorado Springs, so read of that what you may.
I saw that, left field.
Yeah, so that tells me that, you know, that told him. But then he went on and said, hey, look, you know, we have too many good players for too many spots. There's going to be guys that are going to be good players that are going to be sitting from night to night. That's just the way it is. It's up to us to figure it out. So I think we can go on a record assuming Eric Thames does get called reinstated from the DL tomorrow. He will not be in the lineup because Jose Quintana will be starting against the Brewers. So, you know, I would think you would see Aguilar at first base. Moving forward, then, you know, you have to find a spot for Thames to play. So, you know, you can pick and choose your spots the day that, you know, Ryan Braun is out of the lineup for rest or whatever the case may be. Throw him out in left, you know, against a right-handed pitcher that you can put Yelich in right and you can rest Braun. There's a bunch of different permutations and ways you can do this. It never hurts to have too much talent. You know, that's what those guys get paid for, the management. They can figure that stuff out. But if I'm a fan, I'm excited that he's back. It's another power left-handed bat in the lineup. He's prone to ups and downs, no question about it. But you're a better player with Eric Thames on the roster. There's no other way you can look at it than that. So, you know, somebody's gonna be suffering from day to day to day, not being in the lineup. But that just gives you a nice bat off the bench late in the game in a situation. So, if I'm a fan, I'm happy he's back.
I'll be interested to see how he progresses with his power, because anytime a hitter has a wrist or thumb or hand injury of any kind, that's the worry, that the power doesn't come back right away. Although you did see some swings of his in AAA. He looked pretty fine. He looked like he was hitting the ball just fine, so, and driving it. So yes, I will also.
I think Eric Thames, if he took a year off from weightlifting, he would still have plenty of power runs and his grip would be just fine. So I don't think I'd be too. The timing is the big thing. You know, he's got to get that timing back in the box. It might take a little while, but once that's there, I wouldn't fret in the least about a lack of power stroke from that guy. All I got to do is look at him.
All right, so last question before we get out of here. The Brewers draft happened since our last podcast. Bryce Tarang, the first-round draft pick by the Brewers at number 21. It was kind of an unusual draft. There were a ton of pitchers, especially on the third day of the draft. At one point, they took 13 pitchers in a row. A couple guys that project as relievers that were taken early. They didn't take a lot of Division I juniors. Just a couple guys that right out of the gate said they're not signing, which it wasn't a surprise probably to the Brewers, but that they were definitely going to be honoring their college commitments, which you see, I guess, pretty much every year. But did you have any takeaway? It's so hard, I realize, to get a gauge on how they did or who they got, but anything jump out at you?
Honestly, since I was covering the series in Cleveland at that point, I didn't follow it closely other than reading Tom's stuff and just some other stuff that was out there. You know, just minor takeaways from me. I mean, to me, it was interesting. Tarang and Joe Gray 1-2 like that. I mean, these were guys that were projected as being at the top of the draft a year ago in some mocks. You know, and the Brewers walked away with both of these guys. So, I would assume the Brewers are pretty confident that they can, because of their connection with Tarang from him being on their area code team, that they can sign him and get him going pretty quickly. As far as the pitching, all the pitching goes, I was joking with Hadric Cordae, you can never have too many arms. That's the old adage, right? It's just interesting that, you know, an organization that even as recently as 3, 4, 5 years ago, everybody was fretting, you know, why can't this organization develop arms and why isn't there any pitching depth? And suddenly, hey, there's a whole bunch and there's more in the pipeline now. So you let that stuff kind of shake out. You know, drafting the kid from Oregon State, the double Tommy John guy, that's very interesting to me. You know, they did roll the dice on some guys who had firm commitments to schools and just, hey, you know, see what happens. Maybe we can throw a little bit more money at them. But it's just the MLB draft is so interesting and it's such a crapshoot. It takes so long to pan out. It's hard to rate. It's hard to do the you know, the day after is, you know, the grading the drafts. I always love those things. It's funny the day after the NFL draft or the NBA draft, because these are guys that you know are going to contribute this season. You know, we're so far away from seeing any of these guys contribute that it's going to be years before we know. But people still go crazy about it. It's the lifeblood of organizations, especially small market teams like the Brewers. And I do understand the excitement. So, From all angles, it just looks like they've added more young talent to a farm system that's already pretty darn good. And, you know, once we get closer to the trade deadline and you figure the Brewers are going to be buyers, some of these guys that are in the system now are going to be moving on. You got to plug other people in to account for those losses. So who knows, maybe some of these guys will be filling in for other guys that are going to be traded. We'll see. But all I know is that it's a heck of a task. It's a Herculean task to cover those 3 days, and Haudricourt did a terrific job doing it. So kudos to him while I was handling the light work in Cleveland.
You should go check out that draft coverage, including a story on Jared Kelenic of Waukesha West, who went number 6 overall to the Mets, became the highest drafted high school player from the state of Wisconsin in draft history. All of that on jsonline.com, as well as full coverage of the Milwaukee Brewers from Tom Haudricourt and this guy, Todd Rosiak. Thanks for joining us, Todd. We are going to catch you again real soon. We'll see if the Brewers are still in first place. They've been in first place for a while now, so hopefully they will still be there when we chat again.
I'm sure I'll see your smiling face and shiny head in the press box before I know it.
Us ball dudes stick together, Todd. That's how it is.
Word.
All right, thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
See ya.
Thanks to Todd for stopping by. Next up, we have Jerry Augustine, Brewers pregame, postgame show host for FS Wisconsin. He's been affiliated with the Brewers for an eternity. I mean, he was a player for the Brewers. He's from Kewaunee, played for the Milwaukee Brewers in the 1970s, had a long career as a pitcher, has stayed in the area, was the UW-Milwaukee men's baseball coach for several years, and is now an analyst, has been for more than a decade. So wanted to talk to him about a number of topics. Here's my conversation with Jerry. My guest is Jerry Augustine. You see him as a television announcer for the Milwaukee Brewers on pregame and postgame shows. You may know him, of course, as a pitcher with the Brewers, maybe as UWM head baseball coach a few years back, or you may see him on Twitter. St. Augie is a big thing now. what was your reaction to that? I know you're not on Twitter all that much, but obviously somebody made you aware of it because I saw that you did mention it once.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, I saw the picture, and then I was talking to guys in the dugout and say, you know, if someone asks you, you got to respond to it one time, Augie. Yeah. So I did. I one night I was sitting at home and I saw it again. So, you know, I responded to it, and I said, well, if it helps the Brewers win, let's just bring it on. And you know, it's just fun. You know, it's when a team is playing well, and there's a lot of different things you can do to have fun with, and that's one thing you can do is you just things like this make it fun, and that's what you got to have. If it's fun for the fans, it's fun for me, and it's just enjoying it.
Yeah. You've been here 11 years now. When you started, did you imagine that you would still be part of the broadcasting team a decade later? Did you see it as something that could be, you know, a lengthy tenure, or did you just think you'd be around for a few years?
Well, is it that long?
Yeah,
I didn't,
11 years.
You know, every year is something new. It's, you know, when you play within a game of sport, you finish one year and you look forward to the next year. And you know, if you just have a passion for the game and a love for the game, you know, it's not about years. It's about enjoying your time you're here and talking about baseball. And I couldn't be in a better spot. I'm born and raised in Wisconsin. I played my career here in Milwaukee. I love the organization. I love the game of baseball. So I'm just in a perfect spot, and I'm enjoying it.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about your career in Milwaukee. But one of your colleagues, Davey Nelson, recently passed away of cancer. He was a big part of the broadcast team as well. And I think universally seen as one of the nicest guys in the game. Can you give a little more, you know, background to that? Like, what was it about this guy that he was such a magnetic personality behind the scenes and super knowledgeable about the game of baseball? I mean, what were some of the things that really made this guy stand out so much?
He's such a genuine person. You know, you talk about guys that you meet in the game of baseball. Not only his knowledge, he was a great baseball player, first of all,
for sure.
First and foremost. But, you know, he's a guy who had a real passion for the game, and he loves people. And I think when you have those two combinations, you have a lot of things you can offer. And, you know, when you look at the gamut of what he did, first of all, as a player and making the All-Star team, and then going on as a coach and helping some really good young ball players, and then being able to announce and be here in Milwaukee and really being welcomed by Milwaukee, I think it was a combination of Davey welcoming the fans in Milwaukee and the fans welcoming him. But you know, there's not a more genuine person, not a more honest person, and just a good guy. And you meet those in baseball sometimes. Well, he's one at the top of the list.
Do you have any good Davey Nelson stories?
Well, there's probably a lot of them with Davey. You know, there's just so many times where we were together, and you know, we had fun, and he always took care of you, and we had a lot of laughs about baseball. I would have to sit and think for a while, but I could come up with many, many stories. But just to be associated with him and be a part of Davey Nelson's life, and getting to enjoy him and call him a friend was the most important thing.
It seems like he had his hand in everything. He was part of fantasy camp, big with the Brewers Alumni Association. My understanding is he didn't have a lot of family in the area, so he sort of made the Brewers his family. And it seems like, with the broadcast and everything. Obviously, he was a base coach. People may even have started to forget that by now, but it seems like he was a part of every facet of this organization.
I think you hit it right on the head. He made Milwaukee his family. And I don't think Davey would have wanted it any other way. He had his home in Florida, which he loved. But Milwaukee was his family, and the people love him here. I always call him, every time I introduce him and at a fantasy camp or something, I always introduce him as the mayor of Miller Park. And that's what he was. He was such a iconic person here that, people loved him. They loved what he did. He was so honest and very, very well liked.
So we could also call you the mayor of Miller Park, because what you were just talking about, you've been Milwaukee or Wisconsin raised anyway, born and raised. So when you became head coach at UWM and you were there through the year 2007, what was that experience like? That had to be a big deal for you. And then how closely have you kept ties to that program since leaving? Because they're getting a new baseball field now, so they've been in the news a little bit.
The experience at UWM was extremely special for me. One thing I always considered myself was a teacher. I went to school in La Crosse, got my degree in teaching and physical education and health. And so when I had the opportunity to go down and see the only Division I team in the state that needed some help, the first year I just helped out and I really enjoyed it. And, anytime you get to work with young people and take an organization, help it get better and do things, it's pretty special. And then, it took us a little time. We had to build it, and I needed to have a guy like Scott Duffick involved, which was really important to me to get this thing going the way we wanted. And once we did that, things kind of fell in place. We wanted to do it with Wisconsin people, Wisconsin kids, I should say. We did it with a lot of Wisconsin kids, and it was just an honor just to be there and enjoy.
As much as as cool as that program is, Hank Aaron Field. It's not the greatest. It has to be nice knowing that there's a new field coming, that they're finally going to get a facility that's sort of representative of Division I baseball.
Yeah, I can take you back when we first started Division I baseball and I first came in. It was nothing for me to be down at the Hank on a night before a game at 1 in the morning, dragging the field, watering the field, and having it be on my riding lawnmower, cutting. We did everything. After the county had given us opportunities to fix up the field the way we wanted, both Scott and I really, we were there endless hours, but we wanted to do it for our kids. Yeah. And it wasn't about us. It was about the kids and giving the kids the best opportunity to play Division I baseball and play the best teams in the nation.
Yeah. Let's go back to when you're from Kewaunee. And I'm curious if you feel it was easier today for a Wisconsin kid to end up in the with the Wisconsin Major League team, because scouting maybe wasn't as pervasive as it is today. I don't know what your experience was, if other teams looked at you or how that process worked, but maybe can you kind of take me back to when you were drafted and what sort of that process was for you?
Sure. Actually, in high school, I was looked at quite a bit.
Okay.
And I had a lot of scouts coming and watching me pitch. And I was never the very overpowering guy, but I threw the ball pretty good. But the one thing that happened is my senior year in football, I tore my knee up the last game. And I didn't have surgery. I tried to fight through because we had such a good basketball team at home. I wanted to fight through that and play that year, and it did work out. And then baseball, my knee was just bothering so much that I finally had surgery. But then I had the great opportunity going to the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. I got a great education there. I got my degree from there. And the education goes deeper than what you get on your diploma. The education goes as a human being. And just really enjoyed it. And then had the opportunity to be drafted by Milwaukee. And it doesn't get any better than that. And be drafted with guys like my lifetime friend Jim Gantner, and we played against each other so much. Now we became
awesome
teammates. So
yeah,
when you go through things like that, it's pretty special. And be part of the home state is even better.
I'm curious what you interpret the relationship this town had to the Brewers in the 70s. Because, that first decade, the team has come back, and I'm sure there's a fever for it, even if the team isn't competing for playoff spots. How does it compare to what we see today? Was the town pretty Brewers gaga in the 70s?
I think everybody loves baseball.
Yeah.
I think this is a good baseball city, and in Wisconsin is a good baseball state. So I think at that time everybody was hungry for a big a winning franchise. We'd had some teams that were pretty good, but I think it really started in 78 when Harry Dalton came over and George Bamberger came over.
Right.
All of a sudden, we started making some trades, getting some good players, and And we had some good players prior, but we just couldn't get over that hump to see how good we really were. And when Bambi came over here with Harry Dalton, things changed. The attitude changed. The culture changed. And we really became a fun baseball team with Harvey's Wallbangers and Bambi's Bombers and all that stuff. But this team is on a – it's just – this organization now, for what Mark Antanasio has done and with David Stearns and Matt Arnold and Craig Counsell, they have really changed the culture here, and it's a great culture. And baseball's fun. This is a really good baseball team they have this year. It's going to be fun to watch them throughout the summer and see where they end up.
When people ask what game you remember from your career, what highlights you have, what do you say? Because I feel like that chapter of history, those 10 years before the 82 team or the 81 team really, you know, we don't talk about it that much. So what were some of the moments that really stick out in your career?
Well, we always, in American League East, we always had the rivalry with the Yankees. And I think, you know, probably one of my favorites, there's a couple games that come to mind immediately. But one of the games that came to mind, we had a doubleheader against the Yankees, and Mike Caldwell pitched the first game.
Okay.
And I was pitching the second game, and it was funny because I came to the ballpark in about the second inning. We didn't have to come. We didn't have to come right away.
Sure, right, because you're playing the second game.
So I came in, I got out of the car, and we parked outside with everybody else. And I got out of my car, and as soon as I got out of the car, I could feel the buzz. And it was 54,000. I walked in the stadium. I sat in the stands, I remember, and the usher gave me
crazy.
And so I sat there for an inning just watching the game. It was really quiet, didn't talk to anybody. And then ended up that Mike Waldo shut him out 4-0.
Nice.
So we started a second game, and we went up early. I think it was 3 or 4. Scored 3 or 4 runs. And went up, and I walked out of the dugout in the sixth inning. And they started chanting Augie, and
it was
loud. And I got to the mound, and I've never really been affected that much, but that game, for some reason why that happened, I was. And Charlie Moore was catching me, and I was throwing the ball all over the place. Finally, Charlie walked out and said, "Hey, Augie, what's going on here?" I says, "I can hear them too. I think they're cheering for you to at least throw one strike." So he got me laughing a little bit, and I ended up giving a run that inning. I had a shutout going that time, like Mike did. But I ended up giving him a run or two in that inning, but we ended up winning the ball game 5-2 or whatever it was. That's a real memorable because my involvement with the fans.
Of course. What about this season? I mean, there have already been a ton of moments. You know, as we record this, the team's in first place. What you've got to travel on the road quite a bit yet this year too. So what are the game? What's game? Do you remember? Oh my God, there are so many.
I mean, the way this ball club right in the first series and. San Diego were down by 3 or 4 runs, came back, and Ryan Braun hit the big home run. And it's you get on when you're a former player, and I just don't mean that as a former player. I think fans are that way too.
Sure.
You get on an emotional roller coaster with them. And when these teams win, I am just like a fan. I jump and I'm holler and I scream. And when they don't play well and they lose, I'm down a little bit.
Sure, right.
But it's all about having fun.
Jerry Augustine, he is a lifelong member of the Milwaukee Brewers family, player. He coached at UWM. He's a broadcaster. You see him on pregame and postgame shows for FS Wisconsin. Thanks very much, sir. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Great being with you.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Brewers will be home again, like I mentioned, a lot here in the coming weeks. Cubs and Phillies are in town for a 6-game homestand. The Brewers will head back out east to Pittsburgh for 3 games and then come home to see the Cardinals and the Royals. They'll go on a trip to Cincinnati to close out the month of June, back in July for the Twins and the Braves before the final road trip leading into the All-Star break. So we're making some pretty good headway here through the 2018 season, well past a third of the way through the year, and the Brewers are in first place. We'll see where they are the next time we chat on the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll